Welcome to another episode of The Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and once again, we have another fascinating topic tonight. But before we jump off to that conversation, we do have our usual announcements to make. For tonight's show, just like always, I would love to hear from the listening audience. So please send your questions and comments to me at giascott@exogenynetwork.com. I promise I won't give out your name or email, and I won't send you any spam. So don't be shy. I know you have something on your mind that you would love to have the answer to. Now, don't forget, there's also a page on Facebook for all of you Facebookers out there where you can easily post comments and ask for future topics. I also have an author page, which you can go and click like on, showing me support for my written endeavors. Then to email me, whether it's with questions for tonight's guest or about something else with the program, you can send that email off to giascott@exogenynetwork.com. Now, tonight's guest is a pair of brothers. I happen to know them well enough to know that I'm probably going to disagree with them plenty, but they've promised to keep it civil. One of them happens to be my husband, who also hosts Voice of the People on Saturdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Central. The other is his brother, Kevin. And we have some interesting conversations, which get a little heated sometimes because I tend to be a little bit more liberal than either one of them. And I also have a completely different upbringing than they do, in different parts of the country, too. So I'm sure you will enjoy the conversation tonight, but before we start on that, and I let them start talking, I ran across something very interesting on the internet today. I'm also curious what the guys' reaction to it will be, so listen to it. It's credited to a Dr. David M. Scholler, S-C-H-O-L-E-R, a former professor at Fuller Theological Seminary. So, please don't accuse me of being some sort of radical woman who is striving towards removing rights from men. I'm also not particularly inclined towards organized religion, so I'm not pushing that kind of agenda either. It's just a very interesting point of view that I felt was important to share with you, my listening audience. 10 reasons why men should not be ordained for ministry. Number 10, a man's place is in the army. Okay, you know, we've all heard how the army, the armed forces, that's part of the male domain. Number 9, the pastoral duties of men who have children might distract them from the responsibilities of being a parent. Number 8, the physique of men indicates that they are more suited to such tasks as chopping down trees and wrestling mountain lions. It would be unnatural for them to do ministerial tasks, if I don't get my tongue in a knot. Number 7, man was created before woman, obviously as a prototype. Thus, they represent an experiment rather than the crowning achievement of creation. Number 6, men are too emotional to be priests or pastors. Their conduct at football and basketball games demonstrates this. Number 5, some men are handsome and thus will distract women worshipers. Number 4, pastors need to nurture their congregations, but this is not a traditional male role. Throughout history, women have been recognized as not only more skilled than men at nurturing, but they are more fervently attracted to it. This makes them the obvious choice for ordination.
Hello?
I think we just lost Gia.
Okay. I just about lost track of all the comments I had to make to her about her list.
Okay, I'm putting that in. So I'm taking it that we are on the air and that the powers that be didn't want that list to be continued. I don't know if she muted herself.
Well, there's someone with more power than I have.
I think she muted her microphone.
I did that because I got big fingers.
So what did you think of the list?
On the phone, you know, the mute button is located right by the shut the up button. So I kind of slipped and said, shut the up. For instance, did you describe yourself as liberal, as does the mayor of New York City, who is restricting everything? And liberal to me indicates is like a person who is open and generous and giving and loving and doesn't judge. Not someone who denies you. Well, you know, that's an old story. The higher court said, no, you can't do that. They can have their 32-ounce sodas. And liberal means to me, you can fry your french fries in hog fat if you want to, not some dainty sort of... Maybe he's more of a femme, you know? Liberal to me means that, well, she had a good point about her religion, or her non-religion. You know, faith and belief doesn't include religion, so that's a good liberal point. And her list that she was going through about men is not liberal.
Oh, no. Actually, that list was entirely to prove a point. See, everything that I was listing, and I don't know at what point my mic sort of disconnected itself, but...
Number five.
Okay, well, then I will finish the list so that everybody can hear it. Number five, some men are handsome, and this will distract women worshipers. Number four, pastors need to nurture their congregations, but this is not a traditional male role. Throughout history, women have been recognized as not only more skilled than men at nurturing, but also more fervently attracted to it. This makes them the obvious choice for ordination. Men are prone to violence. No really masculine man wants to settle disputes except by fighting about them. Thus, they would be poor role models as well as dangerously unstable in positions of leadership. That was number three. Number two, the New Testament tells us that Jesus was betrayed by a man. His lack of faith and ensuing punishment remind us of the subordinated position that all men should take. And number one, men can still be involved in church activities even without being ordained. They can sweep sidewalks, repair the church roof, and perhaps even lead the song service on Father's Day. By confining themselves to such traditional male roles, they can still be vitally important in the life of the church. Now, you know, if you take these quite literal, they're really pretty insulting.
It's to say the least. I think that was written with a little bit of sarcasm.
Yeah, but it's also the same, it's a flip version of the same arguments about why you'll hear people saying why women should not be ordained, or why women shouldn't do this or shouldn't do that. It's the same sort of illogical logic, you might say.
Point of view.
You know, and the whole thing, you know, I guess why I wanted to read it today was, first of all, I found it really immensely amusing. Secondly, because a lot of the political commentary I've read in the past year has been directed towards subjugating women more. And after all of the advances we've made...
We're not Muslim.
No. But after all the advances that women have made in terms of careers and politics and equal rights and so forth and so on in the 1900s, you know, I don't want to see us lose it in this century. And it's vitally important to me because not only am I a woman, I've got a daughter and a granddaughter. I've got nieces. I've got a sister, you know, and so forth and so on. And I know you guys do too. So the thing is that...
I have women I like.
Yeah, you know, and we all have women we don't like. There's guys we don't like. You know, that's the way of the world, you might say. But the thing is that we shouldn't be judging either gender by these really outdated preconceived notions.
I think it's like Kevin said a minute ago. We're not bashing anybody's religion, but... It's a big thing, and not just in the American media, because there are people in the UK that know that there's this thing going on politically within their system called Islamization, and what you exactly have is you have the degradation of what rights women have gained over the last 125 years being taken away. You have the insanity of these honor killings, or, you know, beatings, mutilations, and just, you know, plain-out murder going on in the name of some religious faction or another. Now, there are going to be people, if we were having them call in, who would be saying that, you know, their Muslim church would not condone such an action and so on and so forth. But that is, we're just generalizing. We're not trying to use stereotypes. We're just going along with what the media has basically spoon-fed us the last 10 years.
If I had breasts, I might be more prone towards nurturing. I mean, if I had milking breasts, but, you know, if I could actually do that, maybe that makes a woman more prone to nurture.
Well, that may be true, but not all women. Not all women are even cut out to be mothers. I mean, some women will flat tell you they have no desire to deal with a squalling brat.
I appreciate that sarcasm from the whole thing, too. And as soon as you say that those women that are not cut out to be mothers or they don't want to deal with that squalling brat, the first thing that comes to my mind is that, and I don't recall her name, the woman in Texas that drowned all of her children, one after the other in the bathtub.
Oh.
You look at that, and, I mean, the root cause of that was her husband was an engineer at NASA, working somewhere outside of Houston or Dallas, and, you know, she started with the youngest child and worked her way up to the oldest child. And
swollen breasts.
I mean, so, to me, that's the first thing that comes to mind when you say the type of woman that would say, I don't want to deal with the screaming brat. But see, then they find themselves in the position, by circumstance, that they actually are a mother. And what frightens me about it is that we have a society that is trying to push the single women, instead of letting them put the babies up for adoption, it's trying to push them into being, you know, completely autonomous single mothers, but then they're completely dependent on the state because there's nothing in our society in the last 30 years to allow a woman to support two or three young children on her own. It's like, you know, the antithesis of the nuclear family that was presented to the American public that they identified with All in the Family and Archie Bunker.
You know, too, we've got really big issues with society's definitions of what it is to be a woman, what it is to be a man. Men are supposed to be so tough. They're supposed to be sexual predators, et cetera, et cetera. We've got women, they're supposed to be all. Women are supposed to all be slim, built in a certain way, have a certain breast size, a certain face, a certain haircut, certain clothes, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
The real world, people are not like that. And that's sort of the same mentality that's producing all these issues with child porn, with the rape culture, with anorexia, with suicides, depression. You know, the list kind of goes on and on because people are being shoved into pigeonholes where they don't fit. I mean, face it. Very few American women or men look like the models you see on TV and in magazines. And that's even with the help of Photoshop, which, you know, to take a beautiful person, male or female, and then Photoshop them to make them fit an ideal that physically nobody can do is ridiculous.
I'd like to take one out to eat.
Mm. I have a salad.
No, you get the biggest salad on the menu, baby. Yeah, that's good. But telling yourself is stupid.
Well, it brings up, like, Kevin's point about the mayor of New York. Did he go to a focus group of New York mothers before he started this soda thing?
No, but he did turn himself into the laughingstock of the world.
Yeah. But it gets me to wonder, how fat are the women in New York?
Well, I don't think they're as bad off as the women in, I think, Mississippi, Arkansas, and one other state had the most obese people, male and female. Although Arkansas did start a major program to encourage healthier diets, better fitness, and so forth and so on, which is something that we really haven't seen as much of in Mississippi, the land of red beans and rice and fried everything.
Yeah, that's going to put some pounds on.
I think one of the things about the difference is that in the Northeast, and I know Kevin got to this, you get lucky if you get 5 months of snow. So
And then in New York City, with the public transportation, the virtual lack of personal cars, a lot of people, when it is, even when it is cold, they are walking just about everywhere.
Yeah, they probably do more walking. Like in small towns, like where we live, walking, I mean, there aren't even any sidewalks. You walk, have to walk on the street. Everything's so far away from where the residential area is. We have one convenience store within reasonable walking distance of a mile or less.
What's take a dog walk?
Well, you know, we do have dogs to walk and whatnot, and it's not to say that we don't walk. It's just a case of, in general, you know, the area does not encourage walking. And that's true in most small towns.
Your dog would drag you down the street.
No, ours wouldn't. But it also happens that we live in a world of many loose dogs who are not always friendly to other dogs, and that raises a whole other batch of issues. But leaving that aside, you know, the whole thing is that not all towns, unlike the urban areas where they have sidewalks and you have to walk to your bus stop and or your subway station or wherever, small towns, you know, there's really little reason to walk.
Except if you're walking your dog or for exercise.
Well, walking your dog, like I said, could be a little hazardous to your dog's health as well as yours. Exercise, you know, it's actually potentially dangerous. I mean, first of all, you're walking on the street. Not all drivers are created equally. And, you know, people don't do much walking. More than, you know, a block or two here and there, they don't walk. Is that a good thing? No. When I was a young girl, life was a little bit slower. And in small towns, especially in the spring, summer, and fall, people went for walks.
Dogs bark out of boredom. If you take them for a walk around the yard, he'll stop barking.
Well, I'm not worried about the dogs barking so much as when you have a loose, unattended dog come rushing out at you with a belligerent attitude towards your dog, you're likely to see a dog fight. And breaking them up could be real dangerous. In Mississippi, we encounter a lot of loose dogs. It's not uncommon for Greg and I to have our vehicle chased 4 or 5 times in a day. You know, it's just leash laws are randomly enforced, apparently.
Apparently people don't care about their dogs.
I could say, honestly, you know, coming out of New Orleans, there you would have people, and it wasn't just because of the kennel, that if you had a dog and the dog was in the yard and the dog didn't have adequate shade or wasn't supplied with water and your neighbor could see it, I mean, you would have a visit from the animal people.
As a form of neglect.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, is that a good thing or a bad thing, or is government overstepping their bounds, or, you know, is it always justified, or is it used in a manner to intimidate somebody? You tick off your neighbor, so your neighbor starts calling animal control or child protective services or the police or whatever, and continually reporting you for some offense, which you may or may not have committed, any form of. You know, we sometimes get a little bit too concerned about what our neighbors are doing, and yet other times we don't express enough concern, and that results in disaster often, acts of violence and all sorts of horrible things.
Well, if the dog comes after me and while I'm walking my dog, and I have a big stick, or if I call APL, the result will be the same. The dog will end up dead.
Well, actually, because of the fact that I have a phobia of a dog chasing me while I'm riding a bicycle, I actually bought spray specifically for the dog that goes in a holster on the handlebars, because I really...
I would call that a phobia. That's a logical thing.
Well, I start, you know, Greg laughs at me because I start panicking as soon as the dog barks and starts to move towards me. A lot of dogs don't go beyond their yard. But as soon as it makes any kind of move towards me, I'm automatically, I'm slowing down, I'm getting wobbly. I was attacked by a dog long, long time, about 30 years ago, I guess now, and did a number on myself with road rash. The dog actually never bit me. After it hit the bicycle and I was all tangled up in bicycle, the owners came, got the dog, and disappeared. Okay, left me laying in the street, but they got
the
dog.
Well, I know you were trying to get over that phobia when you were working at the pet shop.
Well, the only time it affects me is when I am riding bicycle. I mean,
yeah, sure.
And that's the thing. Normally, no, I'm not afraid of dogs at all. But when they come at me when I'm riding a bicycle, and I think it's because I'm up on the two wheels and I feel more vulnerable, as well as it's much easier to knock me off balance.
And run them over as well with a bicycle as with a car.
Well, if you hit them with a bicycle, I can tell you what'll happen. You will fall. Okay? You will fall. A large dog in your bicycle, I can tell you who wins every time. It's
Is that experience, Gio?
Yeah, that's experience. So yeah, no, don't do that. You just do what you got to do. And am I better? Maybe. Am I worse? No. Greg still can laugh at me. He tells me every time one comes at us, just keep going. And I have to admit, that was the cool thing about motorizing a bicycle was all I had to do was hit the accelerator and speed away.
Neighbors running out yelling, "You hit my dog, you hit my dog," and I just keep on going.
Well, it wasn't a case of hitting the dog. I was just out of the dog's reach, which is all I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I've never used a spray on a dog yet. I just bought it last year. And hopefully I never will have to. But, I do have it, and it does give me a sense of security that I didn't have before, because now I can stop the dog before it gets me.
Well, you brought up an interesting word, prayer. Can you tell me what prayer is what you know about prayer?
I'm really not much on defining religious terms and whatnot at all.
Not a religious term.
It's just a prayer. You might say it's just a
prayer is like a thought or a message sent out. I'm thinking, oh my God, and that's not religious because religion means you have a specific belief in a specific higher power. So I'm like, oh God, please let me not die today, and that's a prayer. And I'm thinking throughout the day, well, thank you, God, that I'm still alive. I should be. I don't pray enough. But prayer is not a regimented thing. I mean, it could be, though. It's meditation can be prayer, meditation. Okay, there's a good definition in prayer, form of meditation. Now, what is meditation? You can define that, can't you? That's not religious at all. How do you meditate, Gio?
I'm really not an expert on meditation either.
Do you have thoughts that consume you?
No, actually I don't.
You're not consumed about a thought of, say for instance, I just drank 5 beers. Now I'm being consumed by the thought that I need to relieve myself. Is that a form of prayer? That's meditation?
I have no idea, whether anybody would call that a prayer or not.
It might be a form of meditation if you're sitting in a car driving down the road and then prayer you can stop and get out and proceed to relieve yourself. I say that tongue in cheek. I don't know if there's that big of a connection from where she was going with the dog story. But I would say myself that a lot of my own personal meditation is probably less prayer-like than other people's, because when I do my own meditation, I'm just trying to figure out what I get, that I can communicate with better.
There you go.
And when it gets to the prayer thing, it's I don't think that we can sit there, Kevin and Gia, and say, you know, I would, you know, like the Janis Joplin song, "Oh Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Dialing for dollars, just trying to find me." Okay, I don't think that it's going to work out that way, because you're gonna get what you need, hopefully, to sustain yourself. We didn't know saying that we used a while ago, and I stick to it, which is, you know, how much is just enough, and when you are satisfied and grateful enough with that, then you can keep going, and then you can worry about the color TV and the Mercedes and all that fun stuff that Janis was talking about.
I see. Just on, "Oh God, won't you please find me a toilet?"
Well, yeah, I think about it. How many people would go around, and I'd like to actually hear back from the audience on this one, they would actually go and sit during their lunch hour at work and pray, you know, that they're going to end up getting the 56-inch color television before the Super Bowl. I mean, to me, that's and I'm not trying to be judgmental against that particular person, but that's kind of, you know, that's kind of putting your own personal wish list up there and then putting a post-it note on it that says God.
Yeah.
And that's what prayer is for. And I think that in the last, you know, 100 years, I think that we've kind of lost touch with the idea of what the prayer and the meditation and what the reality of believing in something other than ourselves really is to ourselves as individuals, because in some cases, I'm not going to insult the person listening in the audience, but in some cases, that person venerates the 56-inch color television more than they do the idea of self-importance or ideas.
Well, along those lines of thoughts, I can honestly say I've spent hours at, you know, over my lifetime, probably entire days or even maybe weeks, sitting in a car, holding onto the steering wheel, saying, "Oh, please let there be a rest area or a gas station soon." You know, and does that qualify as prayer? I'm not going to say it did. You know, to me, it was just, you know, this hope. Is prayer all about just hope? Well, I don't need to, you know, like, say a hope. I don't have to meditate on a hope. So I don't know if it's really a definition or not.
Einstein said a good piss is like an orgasm. Just something that came to my mind. Before I say that, no, hope is the substance of things not seen. The substance of things hoped for. The evidence of things not seen. What is faith? The substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So hope is something different from prayer. No, yeah, hope is different from prayer. Prayer is actually expecting something to be...
Well, I fully expected sooner or later there was going to be a rest area or a gas station. Sooner or later, it was going to be right there. I was just hoping it would be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and when we get down to hopes about things, like the stuff that's going on in our culture, the media, we have people hoping to find out more information about the people who conducted this attack on, you know, the sanity of the country that was Boston Marathon thing. And then the aspect that's tossed in there that it's supposed to have, you know, immediately something to do with religion. And, you know, it's not really anything to do with religion. I think that the wanting to blow people up, you know, shouldn't be mixed in there with your hopes of, you know, please let my child do better than I did in life. In the case of the other guy I was talking about, please let me get the color TV. You know, and I think that people who take it to the extreme are, you know, fulfilling their own hope
of other people taking retribution, I guess. And then that kind of goes back to what Gio was talking about with the whole sarcasm thing with our being violent and maybe, in somebody that had a little bit of a twisted feminist sense of humor, saying that the men shouldn't be ordained as ministers because if you didn't quite take it literally, but you looked at it enough off-center to say, what would the typical, stereotypical view of Muslim faith be if the women were allowed to be in the opposite position? And that's what I got from what she opened up the dialogue with. I don't think...
When you think about world politics, they are more than a little male-dominated. And, we have the whole war thing going on and whatnot. Do you think that if women were in the position of leadership worldwide and roles were essentially reversed, that we would see the same kind of violence?
Are you Amazon?
No.
There was a story about Amazon women leads me to believe that women are the most violent people on Earth. We're more violent because there's only two. When you say most, you're comparing two. When you say more, you're comparing three. Women are the most violent people on Earth.
Well, I don't know about that. I saw
Greg,
a farm...
You can attest. Come on now. Testify.
When...
Women are the most violent person on Earth.
When I was growing up and there were fights in the schoolyard and whatnot, it was very rare to see girls fighting. It happens occasionally, but not very often.
I've seen, I think I know where Kevin's going with this, though. You'd see a couple of guys get into a fist fight. I would see a girl reach into her purse, grab a can of Aquanet hairspray and a lighter, and literally, set the other girl that she was going to get into a fist fight with on fire. So.
Yep, some bad stuff. With the woman.
Yes,
That's
growing up, I guess, in entirely different areas and cultures and whatnot. Violent girls were not tolerated. There was a lot of peer pressure for girls to not be as volatile as the male students were, their male peers. In completely different expectations. Now, I know from watching now that this more aggressive behavior, verbally and physically, is now taken as being a positive characteristic. And I find that a little bit concerning as I look out at culture and I see women, posting things on their Facebook wall or wearing T-shirts or whatever that indicates that they like having the term bitch applied to them and that they are proud of being regarded in that way.
And so I've said this before, and it attests to how violent women are. I've said, ow, ow, teeth, teeth.
Wow.
Okay. A joke. So it takes a minute to get it, it's funnier. Some people will be laughing in their cars on the way to work tomorrow morning. And on that subject, I got a call from a solicitor. You happen to be a woman this time. And I am really opposed to people calling me at 7 o'clock when I'm watching Wheel of Fortune. It really just burns me up. So I'm like a... hello, and I'm from such and such a company. I'm like, she's like, how are you? I said, horny. Tell me when to stop.
You're probably a bit good time to stop now, Kevin. We do keep a G-rated program.
All right, this is PG-13 then. We're good. I'll stop.
Okay. All
right. Eventually she hung up on me and called me a pervert.
Yeah, well, that's a different way of handling telemarketers. I think the worst thing I ever did is one called me, and they were from a telephone company, and they were wanting to sell me the extra services, call waiting and all that kind of stuff. And she's going through her thing, and I really had better things to do. and she said something about, you know, I wouldn't want to miss any calls. And I said, lady, as far as I'm concerned, I already get enough, too many calls.
I wish I'd missed birds.
You know, and my favorite thing, though, was my son was 5 or 6 when I started letting him answer the phone with supervision while I would be cooking dinner. And guess when telemarketers call? And he was so, and I didn't even coach him on this. He was so slick with telemarketers. He must have been watching me from, you know, the time he was old enough to know I was answering the phone. He would, the person would call and they would apparently ask for an adult and he'd say, are you a telemarketer? And they, of course they have to say yes, if they are. And he'd say, I only have one thing to say to you then, goodbye, and he'd hang up the phone. I mean, it was hilarious because it was such a little kid and he was doing it completely without being coached. Because he knew I didn't want to talk to him. If it had been anybody else, and sometimes it was somebody else, somebody calling with a what I call a real phone call, you know, then he would say, you know, Mom, it's so-and-so, and, you know, and I'd go answer the phone. But to be freed from the telemarketers during that time when I was cooking dinner in the evening was really, really nice. And he was really polite about it, too.
Yeah, I believe I'm on the do-not-call list now.
That probably broke your heart.
We were, you know, we got into a little bit more of a personally explicit nature with the whys and wherefores of this, and it's extremely aggravating. And there is the do not call us. I mean, you can go Google or Bing search do not call us. It's an official .gov government website. Don't click on another one of these websites. It's do not call us .gov. You can get your home phone, your cell phone, any phone you're using. I put on the do not call list because the telemarketers, once somebody gets a new number, whether it's your number at work, which can get you fired, or your cell phone number, which can cost you minutes and annoy the crap out of you, or your home phone, in which case, like Gia said, you end up with a boy answering the phone. If you get put on the do not call list, there are repercussions for them. If people prove they're violating, knowing that you've been put on the list, too. So it is out there, like many things in the government. It doesn't work all that well, but you have to put a little bit of effort into it yourself. Like Kevin said, you have to go sign up for it in order to be able to use it. And then you tell the telemarketer, hey, I'm on the national phone, call us.
I'd rather mess with them. Now I'm looking forward to someone soliciting me at my home. Come on in, baby.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, okay, then, too, there's the famous email scams. Okay, we've all got them. Somebody has died in some distant country, and you are their designated heir for whatever reason. And I'm still amazed that people still fall for it. But occasionally the mood will strike me, and I'll confess to this. I'll mess with them. I'll waste their time. I will string them along and string them along. I have heard of cases where people have scammed scammers, which has to be hilarious. I don't carry it that far, but I do waste incredible amounts of their time as I ask them, you know, more and more questions and give them no information that they want and, you know, just, you know, really, really waste their time responding to me. And it, you know, is it something that is important? No, it's something I do when I'm bored or I'm irritated, and I get those things.
Well, I don't know how many $1 million Kevin has received from engineers that in plane crashes, but I can tell the audience that one, it is illegal for a citizen of the United States to enter or win a foreign lottery. So if anybody ever sends you an email, you're an American citizen, and says you won the Yahoo/Microsoft/AOL Internet Lottery prize of such and such amount of money, it's a scam. And if there were such a place selling you lottery tickets like the state lottery in Germany, American citizens, you're not even allowed to purchase them by mail. We won.
I think I've only won on the Irish lottery, and I don't even know if they have an Irish national lottery, but I have gotten emails telling me I won.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I won without ever buying a ticket or going to Ireland.
You're the 1 millionth caller for the 1,037,000th time.
Yeah, I guess so. Something like that.
The thing that worries me more than the fake scamming artists want me to send $175 by Western Union to them is the sales of pharmaceutical drugs to people and, you know, trying to get them to buy the prescriptions through who knows where out of the country and tell them, you're going to save money by giving somebody with an email address your credit card number so they can buy your prescription drugs in Canada and then mail them back to you. I mean, you just gave your bank card number to who knows.
Save money, shop here.
Well, you know, and the whole thing is that prescription drugs are really, really expensive, and they're, for many people, very, very essential. They have to have them to stay alive. Now, I know that I have family members that have gone to Mexico to fill prescriptions, you know, but they went. They didn't just send the money. They went. And so forth and so on, because the laws are different in each country. And for some reason, the same medications are often 10, 20, or more times the price they are in other countries, which makes me question the pharmaceutical industry to begin with. And then you've got, you know, a lot of people have got real issues with the way different drugs hit the market. And then several years after their release, all of a sudden they're in a class action lawsuit and being pulled from the market because they were associated with deaths and birth defects and all sorts of horrible issues along the way.
Next time a doctor says, you need to take this psychotropic drug, I will say, well, don't you have LSD for me? Because that's
well,
where that all came from.
Yeah, originally. However, it's not just because something was intended for a purpose doesn't mean it actually turns out to be useful for the purpose. But I'm not so much psychotropic drugs as I'm talking about your more common medications for cholesterol, for heart disease, for diabetes, for multiple sclerosis, and you know the list goes on and on and on of diseases that people are battling.
So
many of them
might have some narcotic drugs.
I really don't know. I don't have it, so I'm not. I don't have any personal familiarity with what is prescribed for them. But the thing is that a lot of these drugs for people are very, very important. It improves their quality of life. It makes them live longer. It makes them healthier while they are alive. It makes them more functional. You know, I take medications every day. Greg takes medications every day. If you took them away, it would have severe repercussions in a relatively short period of time. For both of us, they are essential to maintain a reasonable quality of life. You know, and they have to come first in terms of our disposable income, you might say, because without them, we can't function. So, yeah, I can see where people would be inspired to use one of these online pharmaceutical promises to try and get their medications, especially if they are financially being sucked dry by the expense of the medications.
I think you have a valid point about the original intention and purpose. And I think what happened with the LSD was it came down to, in a fashion, marketability and the lack of marketability is looked upon by most people as something that's recreational and irresponsible. But yet we have these extreme, and there's still psychotropic substances that have been put through by the Food and Drug Administration, some of them under these fast-track programs where they haven't been fully and adequately tested, and they do have some severe side effects. which scare me every time I hear they're bad.
Yeah, some of the side effects, I mean, you know, even the ones I do take, I have to be continually aware of the side effects. In fact, there was a medication that really did make a difference in quality of life that I now do without, simply because the side effects in the, you know, overall picture began to take away from that quality of life until I decided that the symptoms weren't as bad as the side effects. So I opted to go off the medication. And my doctor's aware of why I opted to stop taking it. And it's been close to a year now, and I'm not sorry I quit.
If I take Premarin, would a side effect be lactation? I mean, besides growing breasts.
I have no idea, because I don't know
if
what that
woman
is.
Hormones. Will I, if I take woman hormones, will I grow a womb?
No.
Side effect?
No.
I probably won't.
No, you know, the whole thing is that certain body parts are defined, you know, in the prenatal stage, about the same time that sexual differentiation begins to occur.
Well, what this one reminds me of is, and I know that the closing on the toxin next minute is going to be a great is it reminds me, if anybody hasn't seen it, you see a picture, I think of college kids, they're doing it all. Thing at county fair. They had a 2-pound joint, which was eventually confiscated by the police. And, you know, I think that they didn't have a sense of humor about it. I don't think that they were going to light the thing up and pass it around. You know, like Gina Carey.
No, the 2-pound joint that I saw in the photograph looked to be roughly a yard long and considerably hefty in size, you might say. I think it was done more as a... Pardon?
You saw that picture?
Yeah, I saw a picture online.
Are you getting turned on? Sorry.
The whole thing is that the 2-pound joint, I think, was more of a political statement than it was anything else. I'm not sure what they were trying to say, other than maybe some of the marijuana laws are really not too realistic.
No.
But, you know, who knows? We are at time for a break, though. So while we are away from the mic, don't change the channel. Don't move a muscle. We'll have that short break and we'll be back with more conversation right afterwards.
Are we off the air? Is it okay for me to speak?
No, we will be on the air through the break as well.
Ooh. Listen to the Church of Mabus radio show at 11 p.m. Eastern, Saturday nights with host Jeffrey Pritchett, bringing you The High Strange. Visit www.churchofmabusradio.com. That's www.churchofmabusradio.com.
Hello everyone, I'm psychic medium Christopher George, and along with my co-host Victor the Voice Furman with Second Sight NYC. Victor, who's our guest this week?
Chris, our guest this week is Tamara Lee Doris. She's a personal and professional development expert who uses humor to teach both personal development and spiritual improvement. Tamara prides herself on finding the humor in life. She's written several personal and professional development books, but her new novel, Secrets of a Spiritual Guru, is a hilarious look at how easy it is for anyone to get online and become an instant guru.
Victor, she sounds guru-y.
And Chris, Tamara Lee, we roll along.
Tune in to The Mind Cemetery with your hosts, Chip and Nicole, every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those spicy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement.
The
Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out at mindcemetery.com for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway. Mindcemetery.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Erica Getch. I hope to see you on Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific on the Galactic Connection, keeping you connected 1 hour at a time. For more information, please visit thegalacticconnection.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we co-host a new show called News on the Flip Side. You can catch us every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Central, where we will be discussing current events and topics going on in the world today. We have opinions on everything. There's no topic that we won't discuss, and we'll go places that other shows wouldn't dare. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can catch it here, News on the Flip Side, only on the UFO Paranormal Radio.
Welcome back to the second half of The Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and tonight we are talking with Kevin Miller and Gregory Miller. Don't forget, you can send in your questions to my email, giascott@exogenynetwork.com. But before we get started, Kevin, I know you maintain a blog complete with a warning that it is adult only. Would you like to tell people where they can find it?
I don't know. Are you there, Kevin?
Yes.
Gia was asking for the blog address. I don't know if you heard her just now. I know that it's brutaltruthradio.blogspot.com. And
it's very offensive. It's hateful, racist, everything anti-political and anti-human. Don't look at it. May I suggest, though, since I have a moment to speak, looking on YouTube and listening to the greatest speech ever made, and that is
Charlie Chaplin doing it.
The greatest speech ever made, Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, and that comes from one of Chaplin's movies, The Great Dictator.
Yes.
And I recommend that. Kevin had asked me to go check that out. We were going back and forth with one of our conversations that we had the other day, and it came up, and it was relevant to a point, and it's not what you'd expect. If you've ever heard about The Great Dictator with Charlie Chaplin, it's not just a mockumentary made by one of cinema's little greats poking fun at Adolf Hitler. It is a work of art in its own right, and it sounds like Gia was having a little bit of a problem with her microphone. Welcome the host back to the show.
Yeah, I sort of disappeared all of a sudden. I couldn't hear anybody and had to, like, disconnect and reconnect. But anyhow, I am back now, and before we get too far in the show, I wanted Kevin to tell everybody where they could find his blog with its adults-only warning.
BrutalTruthRadio.com, blogger, or something or another, adult warning.
Uh-huh, okay.
I typed in Brutal Truth Radio, and I hit enter, and then there's a list where I have the different posts, like pets and racism and 10 reasons to save money. They're listed, so I would, look at pets first.
Okay.
The what I typed in about pets, because I love my dog.
Okay. And Kevin, or Gregory, rather, you want to tell everybody how they can tune into Voice of the People Radio on Saturdays?
Well, Voice of the People Radio is on the same network, UFO Paranormal Radio Network, that it is listening to now. It's available to you live through your internet connection or through your radio if you happen to be in one of those places where we are broadcast on AM and FM. And that is from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time every Saturday night. So you can adjust accordingly if you're traveling across the country. If you're in New York City at 6 o'clock, that's the time that we come on. And Kevin's blog is brutaltruthradio.blogspot.com, or if you're a Google blogger, you should be able to type in Brutal Truth Radio. You'll get the warning page that says, I understand and I wish to continue, that I may or may not be offended by the content. Just so you can say what you want without fear of any kind of retribution. I know that a few years ago, we actually had the first libel case where a previously anonymous blogger, she had her rights stripped away from her by a federal court, where she had been attacking a model in the New York fashion industry, and it was causing the model to lose work because people were reading this anonymous blog that, you know, said bad things about her, and the lady who was posting all this stuff had her identity revealed by the court. And that pretty much ended an era from about, you know, 1995-96 through 2007, where you could have had a blog and anonymously said whatever you wanted, and you didn't necessarily have to have that adult warning. And nowadays, things have changed. Just like people let their kids who are under 13 years of age onto services like Facebook, even though it originally said it was only intended for people 13 and over.
Yeah, it's okay for them to go after the youth, but it's not okay for us to go after the youth. I don't want to. I'm not a pedophile. I'm not, trying to mess with children. But, you know, it's okay to go after the youth in the public schools and to teach them some, I don't like to use the word liberal, but that sort of agenda, and strike the white man from the books, and how we settle this country, and how we, Indians are like, oh, man, I would rather be living in a teepee. Forget about this casino and this limousine and, you know, everything else, all the amenities that come with what the white men built here. I'd rather be living in a teepee. Or the Puerto Ricans. Oh, man, I could be having guacamole every day. Forget about this souped-up Toyota. Forget about the money I'm making selling marijuana, you know, and so on. And they hate America because why? They got it better here? They run from their country, you know, the Russian provinces and all that, because of all the war, Afghanistan, because, you know, they get their hands cut off if they don't vote for the right person. Forget about that. If you love your culture, keep your culture in your country. If you come to America, you need to be an American, not an Afro-American, not an Arab-American, not an Indian-American or anything like that. We don't want your culture here. You want your culture here? No. If you want your culture, go back to your country. This is America. We're white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Well, yes.
Okay. Well, I really don't want to have, you know, anything bad to say about anybody else, but I'm agreeing that, you know, if you don't like the way the American culture is, then if you come from another place, then you should go home. If you're a person that lives here and you want to change something, do so, you know, in your own way, but also don't do it at other people's expense. And,
well, we have a complete legal system in place to create change in the country, in the way it operates. But as far as it being a white Anglo-Saxon country, you know, I completely disagree. We're not. We are a melting pot. Sometimes this stew can be a little chunky. Sometimes it can be a little spicy, but, you know, we still are a mix of many different cultures and different races. And to say that it's white Anglo-Saxon...
No, this is one culture. This is the American culture.
That is not a white Anglo-Saxon culture.
I don't think that the melting pot is necessarily supposed to be given to everybody as a white culture and then forced to accept it as a white culture. I think the American culture is supposed to be given to all Americans, and it's up to them to accept themselves as Americans. I kind of agree with where Kevin was saying, if you try to identify yourself as, you know, a subdivision of something before you are a part of the whole, as in, instead of just saying, I'm an American, then I think that we are buying into the whole thing about being separated, and then we are being conquered by our own self-interest rather than working together to solve the problem. Like you said about certain subcultures where people are just happy to have an affordable car, but then they turn around and they do something like they sell illegal drugs, but they don't want to be stereotyped by anybody. So their quick and easy solution, if they run across a problem, is to run back to the country that they originated in, and then once the problem blows over, they can come back to America.
They open themselves up to be stereotyped.
Well, and that's, once they allow themselves to become a stereotype, how can they be proud of saying, well, I am the stereotype? I don't think
they bitch about it.
I don't think that's right. I think that is, why would you paint yourself into a corner? Why would you, it's just like when Gia started off the top of the very top of the show. As a woman, coming out with a piece of sarcastic material like that just to make people think, Gia, do you think that bringing that out onto the air and knowing that Kevin and I aren't here to contradict or argue the point with it, do you still feel presenting that paints you into a corner, almost like what we're talking about with the people with the confusion over the multiculturalism, and that you have to accept my subgroup or you don't accept me, so I don't have to accept America? Do you think that when it comes to the point of view that you expressed with the humorous piece about being a woman, do you think that all women are being classified that way still?
Yeah, anytime you use blanket terms, you're uh-huh. just sort of opening yourself up to be wrong. The thing is that in the United States, women do have an immense amount of freedom and equal rights. But within the nation, at large, we see areas where women are still expected to wear rather long dresses, to wear their hair long and pinned up as adult women, to behave in a certain manner, to follow male orders, to not have any life outside that dictated by their father and then their husband. And do I agree with that? No, I think that's horribly restrictive. Do I think I have the right to go and take it away? Not necessarily. To a degree, I believe that people have the right to live that way if that's how they choose, as long as they're not infringing on
the welfare application in three different languages. We really need to have interpreters to speak Mexican or whatever Rican language at the welfare office. This is America.
Well,
are you cashing a check in pesos?
At the same time, I've been in Indian Health Service hospitals where they didn't even have a translator available to speak the language of the tribe that they were supposed to be serving.
You didn't even care enough to learn our language?
Well, you know, the thing is they were here before the American culture was.
Excuse me, would you rather live in a teepee or in a casino hotel?
Teepee, to be honest. I wouldn't like living in a
casino
hotel.
Learn the language.
Well, I think what she's saying, Kevin, too, is we're talking about Indian Reservation Hospital, and then they don't have anybody, you know, there that...
And face it, you know, in modern society, even in a reservation situation, very, very few people are not at least functionally able to speak in English. The only time you deal with somebody who cannot understand English or speak in English is going to be somebody who's injured or is sick.
No, speaking the English.
Are you going to let me talk now, Kevin? Otherwise, I'll just sit back and let you rant some more.
Oh, good choice. No, speaking the English, the cop pulls somebody over and like, oh, no, speaking the English, no, speaking the English, and then they got the American driver's license, which, of course, they're not American because they've never been through the process, and, you know, they go to their side of the prison, you know, with all the Puerto Ricans. This is mini America. America is the melting pot. It's not a stew. America and our the gravy that holds us together is our borders, our language, and our culture.
I don't really like it when people use the idea that they can say that they don't speak English or they don't understand something as an excuse, and when they're trying to get out of a traffic ticket, they're trying to have their way with some place, getting served faster in an office with government or something like that, because they knew where they were when they walked into the situation. If they got pulled over by the police, they were obeying the regular traffic laws, just like everybody else. I really, personally, don't see a point in providing people with preferential treatment based specifically on whether or not they use a language or not. But
well, in terms of violations of the law, you know, ignorance alone is no excuse. It is not a good defense in the court of law.
That's
it will
law
not get you
house.
Off. It will not get you off of the charges that have been placed against you. And the same thing is true. If you speed, I don't care what language you speak. You might speak Antarctican or whatever, and not have any clue about what English is all about. When you started driving, we're assuming you had a license at all, you had to say, yes, I understand the laws in order to drive here. When you enter a country, it is really your responsibility to find out if there's any particular laws that you need to be concerned about violating. Like in my case, I know if I go to certain countries, going around in tank top and shorts with my hair in a ponytail just might not be the best way to see the sights. And, you know, that is it wrong? It's not my twofer to determine how another country operates. You know, it's a case of take care of your own backyard before you worry about other places. I don't think necessarily that the United States has business acting as the world's police department. It's too expensive. It costs lives. It costs billions of dollars every year. You know, and at the same time, the isolationism that you're talking about, Kevin, you know, if we look back in history and other periods of isolationism, that's not good for America either. We really need to hit something sort of in the middle.
Examples.
Isolationism results in unfair tariffs on imported goods. It restricts what comes into the country, what goes out of the country. It causes economic hardships.
That's two sentences were the same. Isolationism, increased tariffs, less goods, of course. same thing. It's going to great presence going to rise here.
It's like they, you know, if they increase the tariffs on the goods that come into the United States from a country like China, then you're going to see something you wouldn't have seen 25 years ago. Of course, everything that is sold in Walmart nationwide is going to go off.
Like the Great Wall of China?
Yeah, you know,
that when they named that store the Great Walmart? Do you think they were thinking the Great Wall of China?
I don't think that they saw the thing developing into what it is developed today. And I don't think that the American consumers thought that they were getting themselves into the predicament that they have with things like that. It's like the story, you know, of the frog not noticing that the water it's sitting in is actually in a pot, so as the heat underneath it is turned up until it boils, the frog doesn't realize that it's been in a pot of water and it's about to be cooked.
Did you use daughter and China in the same sentence?
No, are you having trouble hearing me?
Yes.
Okay, let me try to fix the my sound here. What I'm saying is that if you weren't able to hear me before, the people weren't understanding what they were getting themselves into with the situation by having another country supplying it with inexpensive goods.
Yeah, but don't you know that they are raising their prices at the same rate that, well, they set their prices, first of all, to undermine or, you know, lower than what was charged in America. But, you know, you can't get a Toyota for any less than you can get a Chevy now.
It's by those type of comparisons, and then there's the people that are going to try to make the argument that the Toyota brand of car is now being more manufactured in the United States than...
Oh, they all are greedy.
Yeah, and then you have the brands that are manufactured completely outside of the country. So does it cross a line once it starts being domestically produced and you can just call it a foreign-owned entity?
You do like the Americans.
Well, that's sort of like making the same excuse and saying, okay, well, we're employing less of our own people by making this car because we're going to be employing more of your people to make the goods. And then the same thing that applied with the let's say, Toyota and the auto industry applies to the cheap goods, the bad furniture, the toys with the red paint, the, you know, products that aren't necessarily fit for your pets to eat that all end up coming out of a place, and then you have to wonder where, you know, these, you know, legal reforms are coming from. Are they even going to be coming out of our Congress anytime soon to stop any of that? And is that eventually the way that the whole, you know, taking over of small town America by this corporate conglomerate is going to happen, or is it really going to end up being just...
I lose my place. So, we are employing your people. Thank you, Mr. Chinese Man.
Well, they're employing more people than live in the United States. And I think the strategy was, you know, realistically, to employ the Chinese with white industry and things like this, rather than have them employ themselves in a war of aggression against the rest of Asia and Europe and the United States. You know, to be quite honest, if I were looking at it strictly from a political point of view as an economist, I would say that's the best thing to do is to keep people from starving,
I used to take for granted the word political and politics, and I had it defined to me, but still I don't understand. Politics, political, what does that mean?
Well, you know, it starts with people. And one of the biggest problems is that our political system doesn't begin and end with our people. There are very few politicians that you're going to find that are not out looking for a vote, who are going to actually sit down and give you and me the time of day, Kevin, where, you know, we could sit down and have a cup of coffee with them. They're more in line of looking at, you know, what are we going to be able to do to be able to put more money into their pocket for their next election campaign.
It's not like where, you know, I live in a small house in Warren, Ohio, and, you know, my neighbors say, hey, Kevin, go tell them what we think about that. And I go there and I say, hey, this is what they think about that. This is what my neighbors think about that. And I come home and, you know, the process runs. Now it's, I'm going to live in Washington for 40, 50, 60 years. I'm going to retire as a senator or die as a senator. And I'm going to make friends with all the big wigs who actually I have developed into big wigs. Big wigs is an old term from England where the people of a higher status wore big white wigs. And they're all my friends, and I'm going to live here, and I'm going to be a big wig. I'm not going to go back to that little house in Warren. I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to get my whatever I want. And if the little people, now that we've come here, we're all going to stay here. What the hell? They'll all be little people. And we're not going to go back there. Forget the little house in Warren. I like this penthouse over here. I like this and that, and I'm getting my limo driver and this and that. Forget that. I'm not going back to the mill.
When people look at equipment, so that's the problem. They look at putting themselves in a position of advantage. I don't know if it's political season up there or where you're at in Ohio. I know it's a political season there. So it's kind of funny. We've got, I won't name the names of people, other than a small town, 20,000 people, and I don't want to make any phone calls.
I'm hearing you, Greg.
But they know who they are. And they've gone around, and they've done stuff, Kevin, in places like Chicago, Cleveland, New York. Probably get you hurt. And they come and put their lawn sign in your yard.
I've been like that before.
It's rude to come by and lawn out it. And this is a bad part. I said, actually, shopping at Walmart is something that Walmart had put out of business to the point that the only place I could get it for my wife was to go there.
The Great Wall of China.
It's bad when you can't locally resource something. Your recourse is Walmart. Unless you really want the expensive ceiling fan, your recourse is Walmart. You look at it and you say, wow. It's
same thing at the same price at Giant Eagle. Oh, Giant Eagle, I'm sorry. That's an English market. Or British.
When you look at the political goings on in situations, I don't know that the way that corporations, they're multinational corporations, they're not just headquartered here in the United States.
Why every time I get a grill, I need to speak six languages to read the instructions to put it together.
If you like some people, you have honestly opened that package when you bought the grill, and then you didn't find the English instructions for the grill.
My new mantra is, save a tree, speak English. We don't need to print our instruction books in six languages. So we need like I need one page of English. Most people need three pages of English in order to assemble a grill. But we don't need to print a novel, a book for like 20, 30 pages and 5, 6 languages everywhere in the world. Because I'm sure the Chinese are like, Incontrol, why do I have to speak 6 languages? Why is this book printed in 6 languages? We don't have enough trees here in the first place. You know, they're cutting them down. And so, yeah, your point is made about corporations. But how difficult would it be to have a village blacksmith?
Well, you know, how difficult is it to put anybody back into business with small industry just so to keep the knowledge of what we do and why? You could crank out 500,000 items a day in a foreign factory, but if you don't have anybody left in your own country to understand how to put that thing together, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Oh, you got me thinking of overpopulation now.
Well,
how long will it be before our national forests and our reserves are overrun by Chinese, Mexicans, Arabs, Indians, etc.? Let's get into immigration. Stop immigration. We don't need the problems they have in India. We don't need the problems they have in China. Stay there. Fix your own problem. Don't bring your problem over here. Don't bring your drugs over here. Don't bring your religion over here. Don't bring any, you know what? Keep it there. What Anglo-Saxon Protestants don't use birth control. Yet, we still got these vast lands that we enjoy and we call national reserves. They got pollution worse than California. They got overpopulation worse than China, etc. And, so back to isolationism, the topics just jump. I can hardly speak a word without 10,000 different thoughts jumping in my head. That's why the doctor gave me those pills. And I'm much better now.
Well, you know, I think that sometimes the entirety of our society thinks that they have to take that little pill so they feel much better. But I don't think that some people realize, to be quite honest, Kevin, that people who are in the other countries, they're not as aware of what you had just said as the average American is going to be. They're not as informed. And I know that that changes on a day-by-day basis because now television becomes more available, radio becomes more available, film has become more available. You've seen, like you said, about culture in India, the whole Bollywood thing. You know that there's a multi-billion-dollar industry on it, so you can't say that the people of India are ignorant any longer, as if they might have been if you were watching the Ben Kingsley movie Gandhi and you think that everything is like that. It's really not. And, you know, so we can't say that they're on the same level of understanding as the American population is about it, because the way they're looking at it, they're not victimizing anybody in American business when we call and we get horrible customer service. Would you prefer to have, you know, somebody? It's like the menus that you get when you do a customer service call. Would you prefer to not have to listen to a prompt that asks you whether you speak Spanish or whether you speak English, or whether you speak, as you had said before, Russian? Do you want to have to call customer service and wait through that thing that asks you which language you want to speak? Or would you rather just have a real human being pick up the other end of it and start asking you what they can do to help you with your problem?
Well, Trouble hearing you. I would rather speak English, but, I'd rather speak English. The thing was, another language will improve my mental agility, but I don't need to exercise it to order a hamburger, you know. I don't have to go to McDonald's and say, give me a hamburger in Spanish, is it? Or a form of Greek? Is it Greek? Or I would really like to learn the Hebrew language because I want to be able to read the Holy Bible, the first five books, what did I call the Tentus? Anyway, in the original Hebrew.
Well, I think it's one of the things that made America great when it was honestly the melting pot in all ways concerned, because the children of immigrants that came to the United States would learn English, they would go to schools, and they would bring the English home to their parents, and their parents would learn a bit at a time from the children, and their parents would learn at their job from other people that were willing to help them learn the English language. So it didn't matter if they were Hungarian, if they were Polish, if they were Chinese, wherever they came from. They were, the thing that they were putting themselves in touch with each other and they found that was the English language and the American flag, that people had a sense of pride about it, where I kind of sense it.
I'm having trouble hearing you, so I'm going to interrupt. It doesn't take any language to dig a ditch. But I'm sure that those people have a great deal of intellect. I mean, Einstein was German, and... Okay, I'm not going to go there. You know, and a lot of people who don't speak English may have something to contribute besides...
What is the language of business, Greg? I'm under the impression that most international business is conducted in English, isn't it?
Yeah, about, 25% of the world's population right now attempts to be as fluent in English as they possibly can. We have people.
I gotta wonder why the dollar is so devalued.
Well, when you look at the language of business,
it is intrinsic.
It really makes
language.
Sense that we encourage children to become fluent in mainstream English, not a local dialect, not a version of English, but actual mainstream English, like we're speaking tonight.
American.
To be able to progress through their professional careers, whatever they choose to do, whether it's digging ditches or building buildings. If they can't speak in English that sounds reasonable, it doesn't have to be American. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Australian English or any other brand of English. There are, but the mainstream English is understandable between these different cultures. And, if we're allowing kids to graduate from high school in the United States that you can't even hardly understand when they are speaking English, then we're really doing them a disservice. And oftentimes, you look in these, especially the poorer neighborhoods, poorer communities, you see these kids graduating from high school, and you ask them a question, and you stand there for a minute, and you wonder what language they just answered you in. They don't speak another language. They speak some dialect of English that the rest of us have a hard time understanding.
Because they're rebelling against America. Even while they're learning our language, they hate America, just like those Arabs who bombed Boston.
I don't think. When you look at these kids growing up in small town America or in inner cities, I don't think it's because they hate America. It's just the language that they have always expressed themselves in, their neighbors express themselves in, and they're not being taught proper English in school.
I don't see they're being taught wrong.
Well, when you look at it, guys, when you have where somebody goes in and they tell people that it's okay to let their kids refuse to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, or, you know, to have any participation in singing the national anthem. I can't but, you know, look at that myself, and I'm not going to be apologetic about it. I can't look at that myself and say that that's not teaching a child that it's okay that the person that told them that they don't have to doesn't like it. So they're asking them, the child, to conform to this idea. And if it would be different if there was a child that expressed the idea to me that said, I do not feel I should say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Maybe they had a valid reason. But when they're being taught this at home and they're bringing it into the public education system, and in some cases into the parochial education system, and it becomes a political issue, I think that's where we're not looking at the cause of it is the educational system or the people, you know, putting the rules down for that. The cause is going back to the parents at home, like the ones that are teaching them to speak a gibberish instead of enforcing that they should go to school and learn English.
Well,
why don't you
go to
China and speak English?
When we
go to Mexico and speak English and see what happens.
Talk about the Pledge of Allegiance and whatnot. You know, I came through school in an era where we weren't allowed to say the Pledge of Allegiance. We weren't allowed to say the Pledge of Allegiance in school anymore. It was considered inappropriate somehow. You weren't allowed to have any religious material at all. You weren't allowed to say prayers in public school. That's not to say that it never happened. You just couldn't do it within eyesight or earshot of a school official, a teacher, principal, counselor, whatever. And that was, you know, it was completely secular, and we didn't have the displays of flags and whatnot that I'd had in earlier years in elementary school.
Which were some good years.
It
didn't make me un-American, and I had no desire to go bomb anybody. It doesn't make me speak English less. It doesn't make me speak English better. You know, it really, you know, as far as I can see, the whole prayer, Pledge of Allegiance, national anthem, it really doesn't make that much difference. It really doesn't.
You know,
well, not to you, because
there was a girl.
But I go and say the Pledge of Allegiance in Mexico.
We're not actually, in Mexico.
Actually,
yeah,
Kevin brings up a point.
Yeah,
there's a girl that,
well, you can do it here.
And a girl that was taking a Spanish class, believe us or not, was asked to leave the Spanish class and then wasn't left anywhere else in the school, so I guess she got to go home. Because in the Spanish class, she was asked to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag, and then she was asked to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of Mexico, and she refused to do so because she told the teacher, although, you know, Spanish was also her family's native language, Kevin and Gia, she refused to say
that.
Pledge of Allegiance to the Mexican flag because America was her country. And I applaud her for standing up for that because she said, I'm not allowed to say Pledge of Allegiance at the auditorium in the school where I'm at today, but the Spanish teacher is asking me to not only say the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag, which the school has prohibited, but is also asking me to say Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of another country. And I don't know that the Spanish class teacher didn't have some sort of political motive for the whole thing.
I have walked up to people speaking some other language at Walmart, and I say, I have some, do you know what country you're in? There were some, you know, momentary stares, and I walked away. Do you know what country you're in? And that little girl did.
You know, and it wasn't uncommon for me growing up to hear foreign languages. I heard Dutch and I heard German quite often. And then when I would be in another part of the country visiting the other side of my family, I would hear Spanish. Did I find it offensive? No.
Well,
is it rude to use another language when the rest of the people in the room do not speak that language? Yes. Those people are rude. You know,
well,
choose to exclude others, it's like using some sort of secret code or whispering.
That happened to me. Kevin and my father was walking through a Home Depot store in Ohio, and a couple of guys were using language. If I were to use the same language in English right now, the radio station would get $25,000 fine. and they were in the middle of Home Depot talking at the top of the lungs because they figured since they were speaking Spanish that nobody was going to hear them or be offended by it. That's like you said, Jay, that's like offensive behavior.
So how did they insult us?
How did they insult the people?
I mean, besides not speaking our language, they personally insulted us.
Oh, it's the idea that I'm going to exclude you from what I'm saying. Like Gia had just said about, it's like being secretive. By speaking nothing but the other language on the bus. Now, the thing is if you're strictly an English speaker, you would have no idea whether or not they were sitting there talking back and forth, but, hey, when that guy gets off the bus, we're going to go behind him and knock him in the back of the head.
I dare you to say gringo again.
And, you know, in some neighborhoods, people might look at it and they might not have such humor about that. In other parts of cities all over America, people walk around and they have this tension. It's just like walking into a neighborhood where, and I've lived in one, where you couldn't get a job at the McDonald's, and it wasn't because you couldn't speak Spanish and communicate with the people in the neighborhood. It was because you didn't look like you were a Latino or of Hispanic origin. And that's, you know, to me, that was more disturbing than them asking about whether or not I would ask somebody if they wanted to have fries with that in Spanish, was the idea that it then wasn't a language issue anymore. It was, you don't look like these other people over here. You don't sound like these other people over here necessarily. And you are going to act or you're not going to fit in. And all it was a job, you know, and you'd end up asking somebody, hey, you know, you want fries with that? I mean, you figure anybody that lives in another country is going to catch on to that phrase. That may be the only English that they know.
So this tranny asked me, I was talking to this tranny, and like, well, can you have my children? And she's like, no. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, and that's another issue. I don't know that we've crossed the line with that. I think it's a little too early in the evening for that one, Kevin. I'm going to say, you know, probably not. But if they're able to, you know, that's the other thing is, do you have these questions about community and people being able to adopt children? Is it a prerequisite anymore for you to be in an English-speaking household in America to be able to adopt children? Not necessarily. And you end up with households where Spanish is not spoken as a primary language. English is not spoken as a primary language. You end up with this mishmash of Spanglish, gibberish, something. And unless you're, like Gia said, really used to listening to that, you could be in another neighborhood in a small city, and you don't know where you are.
English is the most elegant language.
I don't know about elegance, but it is a borrowing language. We borrow words from all the other languages, and we do it continuously. But, guys, we are winding up the program. We've been all over the topics tonight, and I'm sure that the entire audience has gathered that I don't necessarily agree with many things that have been expressed tonight.
The most elegant.
And with that disclaimer, Greg, you want to tell them where they can tune in to Voice of the People again?
Voice of People Radio, Kevin was on with me last week. We were talking about how political correctness and a philosophy may be detrimental to your mental health in America in 2013, along with some stuff following up with some current events from last week, the week before, and it's on from 6 to 8 Eastern Time in New York City. You can tune in to us on a Saturday. And you'll hear Voice of the People Radio on UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And I would like to throw Kevin's blog out there again. I sometimes come in and write at brutaltruthradio.blogspot.com. If you're on Google Blogger, you can put in Brutal Truth Radio. You can have it select and find adult-oriented content because there are things that are printed there by people listening in the audience. They're allowed to come in and comment and speak their minds.
Aren't we all welcome to write and comment?
Yes, absolutely. They can join the blog. They can become a contributor. You can click on Kevin's smiling face there and actually write your own posts and bring your own thoughts into the discussions. And I'd like to thank Gia for having us on the Dawn of Shades tonight.
It's been definitely very interesting. Folks, while we're talking about blogs and whatnot, you can also catch my blogs. I maintain several different blogs. One is just Gia Scott, and you can find it on the internet real easy. I also do one called Gulf Coast Foods, which is obviously the food-oriented one. There's Get Ready Go, which I'm the usual contributor, and that one's about outdoors activities, emergency preparedness, and whatnot. And the fourth one is our 1948 house, which is about Greg's and I adventure in buying an old house and super gluing it back together. Sometimes that's what it feels like, super gluing it back together. With that, we are...
Hello? 10 seconds. Would you rather be born in China as a woman or as a man?
I think Gia muted herself again. So I don't know what happened there, but I would like to say that...
Well, I'm back.
But we love China.
I'm back again. Yeah, I actually bumped the mic.
And you did it again.
I should be back. I can hear this time, but I can't say anything.
Okay, well, you should probably say goodnight to everybody because we're up to the end of the broadcast.
Yes, and I was trying to close with my usual thing. I hope that tonight's program has given everyone plenty of illumination for your personal journey towards truth. Tune in again next time as we bring another guest, another topic, and a whole new idea for your consideration. You've been listening to The Dawn of Shades, and I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks.
States. On the other side of the planet, it is early morning, and in some places further around the planet, that you're well into your day. Wherever you happen to be, this is a good time to be listening to the Kiff Show, because we are going to be talking about some important and very, very interesting things here tonight.